your ego hits the floor. When you do this gig, someone who has had the opportunity to stand on stages and talk and be seen as successful, then to not have anything and be really confused is a huge ego shift.
Welcome to Building Doors. In this series, you'll develop the skills to build a roadmap for success, get inspired by those leaders who have come before you, and give you the confidence to stop waiting and start building.
Kim Curtin, welcome to the Building Doors podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's very good to be here.
I know. I think we've been talking about this for a couple of months to try and line it up. So appreciate you coming from the sunny coast as well to do it face to face.
Absolutely.
Always great. So as always, we're going to tell the audience a little bit about you to learn more about who you are and why I've got you on here today to chat and share some insights with us. So, Kim Curtin, aka Good Side of the Bed, is host, creator, and producer of Unemployed and Afraid, a popular small business podcast for the brave self-employed. With over 100 episodes, she dives into the realities, practicalities, and self-growth journey of starting a business from scratch with the people doing it. Before all that, Kim was a baby entrepreneur, creating and closing two businesses before the age of 21. And then spent over a decade in the commercial radio business. No pressure. She's also a creative and commercially minded podcast strategist, helping brands and business owners build themselves big podcasts. She's worked with brands like Squarespace, Queensland Tourism, Bendigo Bank, Vodafone, and more, creating award-winning and chart-topping brand environments. And she was recently the Rising Star finalist in Australian Podcast Awards for her own podcast. Again, Unemployed and Afraid. The second plug there. I hope you all heard that. I really wanted to get Kim on the podcast today because I have actually had a few people approach me wanting to start a podcast, but also as somebody that interviews business owners and small business owners every day of the week and being one yourself, I just thought there was so much that you could share around your personal journey and also insights you've gained through your podcast on the journey and lessons of others.
Well, I hope you and your listener is ready for a wild ride of no sensical pathway whatsoever.
Here for it.
If we go right the way back, I left school as soon as I could, as soon as I possibly could. 15 years old, I was out of there. I was desperate to get into the workforce, work for myself, make my own money, just get out there and get started. I just felt like academics was not for me at the time. I just found it quite stifling. And I'm you know, someone who wants to just spread my wings a little bit and try things out. So I threw myself into work as quickly as I could and just tried things out. You know, I worked at a cafe, which is where I did work experience. And then I studied in remedial massage because that took my interest. And that led me into beauty therapy at the time. I think most young women will toy with this idea at some stage, particularly of my demographic. I had a little bit of fun with that and I started working for a beauty salon. And I was hiring a chair, as they say, in those days. And I was sitting there and loving it, enjoying it. And the person who owned it told me and the other team members that they were going to be selling it. I was heartbroken because, you know, I felt like I'd finally found my place in the world. I was running my own schedule a little bit and money was quite good for that age. And I was enjoying myself. I had fun. I was working with friends. And so, you know, I was talking, why do you have to do this? Don't do this, you know. And she said, well, I'll sell it to you if you want. And I was like, what does that look like? And she said, well, you know, you can have this and this and this and the staff and the name and $5,000. And that's a lot of money for a very young girl, but it was pretty much all the money I had in the world. So I called mum and dad, said, look, I got this idea. I got this thing I want to do. And they're like, just wait until we get home. We're going away for the weekend. Just wait till we get home. Think about it. Sleep on it. I completely ignored them and went 2 feet into the deep end, taking on this quote unquote little business. I don't think ever diminishing any kind of business is fair to the experience itself, but it was, you know, jumping in. I had no idea what I was doing and I made every mistake possible. I chilled too much. I didn't put enough effort in. I didn't know where to put effort in. I got oversold by advertising, you know, newspaper advertising was the big thing of the day. Got oversold on that and spent money on things I didn't need. Had a really challenging interaction where somebody who'd worked there previously came back into the business wanting to take the clients and just felt like I was failing. I felt really challenged and it ended up that it wasn't the right thing for me. I was too young. I didn't know what I was doing. So moved away from that. And a few steps later, a few trial and errors later, different roles, I'll skip past that to get to the good stuff. I landed myself in radio.
Okay. How did that happen? How did you land?
I think I just talked myself into it, to be honest. But I was working at the time for an events company and modelling agencies that did sort of promotional modelling and, mm-hmm. you know, runway events, just local and all kind of building. And I was working on, you know, hiring out staff and kind of helping with the events, helping with promotions. It was a startup phase. So I was kind of into everything. So I was having fun just trying things and, you know, working with clients. I was building those sorts of skills. So I did have the ability to go in and sit down and talk to someone and talk my way around a few things. Now, this radio station in particular was a community radio station as opposed to a commercial radio network, probably a little bit harder to get into without any experience or any study in the area. But they were willing to take a chance on me. I actually recently interviewed the person who hired me on my podcast. He has his own really successful e-commerce agency now called Ecom Nation. And I interviewed him recently. He hired me. And so that was just a little bit of a blowout.
Mind blowing.
Yeah. It was a bit of a blowout for both of us. But, you know, he said then, you know, I just felt like, you know, you would do well. And I did. And I did really well. And I loved it. I loved the energy of radio. Radio people are unique. They are high energy. And they pushed me to be more high energy. They're funny. You just have a really good time. So you know, always behind the scenes, marketing, promotions, sales. And from there, went into commercial radio. So I worked for a large network and I followed that career along the pathway, but also into different markets. So I was in Adelaide early days, went to Melbourne, went to Sydney. And through that 13-year period, I worked my way up and through pretty quickly. And that was an absolute blessing. It really pushed me to do things I wasn't quite ready for. But I always put myself into that position where I was like, yeah, I can do that. I'll be okay to do that. And then I'd go freak out in the corner later and figure out how to get there. My last role in radio, in commercial radio, I was running a team of strategic professionals in branded content. Essentially, our job was to come up with ideas for brands. So throughout my career, the primary part of that career, I've always worked with major brands in creating ideas for them to thrive to an audience or get their message across in unique ways to an audience, as opposed to another very valid option, but as opposed to getting an ad written, putting the ad into the airtime, dust hands, move on, play for reach. I would work with the team that came up with the big ideas, the fun ideas, the more integrated ideas.
Yeah.
So it was a big team. It was a big role. It was very gnarly deadlines. You know, I've got $1 million to spend, brand X has, and you got 3 days to come up with a fantastic idea. So our team would get to work looking at human insights, listener insights, you know, talent to align with the platforms. Or just like we'd have to really go deep and then try to be unique in what we put together for the client, package it up into something really beautiful, make it sing, make it work, and often go to market with about just a shorter deadline to get it up and live. So I've worked under pressure and I've worked in high energy spaces and I've worked with brands for years and years and years. I got to the stage where I just felt my energy shifting and I can't really describe it. I think a lot of people have this experience and it's just the benefit of hindsight to be able to go, I was done. But at the time I felt my energy shifting. I felt pressured by just the role itself in terms of much of the same, but different. So, and I started to feel, okay, so I put out this great go-to-market strategy for getting more briefs to come into the door. Okay, great, I do that. And I think there's only so long that you can work in that space where your primary goal is to get more revenue in than the year before.
Yeah.
And whilst it can be really fun and entertaining and enjoyable, I also worked with all of my best friends and I loved that. But that meant that when I went home, I talked about work. When I went on the weekend, I talked about work. When I went on holidays, when I met my partner, I was on holidays with my workmates. And so we were very integrated and radio was very integrated into my identity. So I felt a pull and some sort of like a negative ion almost away from the role. I felt like frustrated with it and angry with it. And I think it was the part of me that just wanted to be my own person and grow into something different and find my own identity. But I didn't have the language to articulate it at that time. So instead, I talked to my business coach about it, who my network I was working with kindly gave to me as part of a development opportunity. And I sort of spoke to her and we were trying to work through this. You know, is it being more honest with your boss or, you know, about how you're feeling? Is it, you know, shooting for a new role? What is it? And then I was like, I think I just need to quit. And she's like, oh, shit. I don't know if we can swear in this podcast, but
definitely fine.
Excellent. But she's like, maybe that's not quite my KPI. Like I'm trying to, you know, I'm your business coach. But, you know, so again, think about it. Take some time. I didn't take some time. I very quickly went in 2-3 days later and told my manager that I was leaving. And Like, that most certainly didn't go anywhere near well. It was a very uncomfortable conversation. I was very unsure of myself in it. I didn't come across like knowing what I was talking about. I didn't make any sense because everyone's like, well, you've got this great job. Where are you going? What are you doing? What are you going to do? What's your problem? Do you want to go into a new role? Do you want to do this? And I was like, no, genuinely, I just need to stop this. And that is a hugely privileged position to be in because at the time I don't have children and I had a little bit of savings behind me. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to be okay. I'm just going to figure it out because I can't figure out what I want to do, who I am and where I want to go without getting some headspace back. Mm. You know, let the 700 emails just chill for a minute. Mm. Let the, gosh, Monday whips back to back. Who gets any time to think in some of these roles? Mm. Let that go and I will figure it out. And I had that trust and belief in myself that I would figure it out. And so that was January 2020. Good timing, Kim.
So, COVID.
Yes. So my confidence in, you know, my ability to find a role that felt like it might help me get closer to the thing I wanted to get to really went away very, very quickly. And so I spent a lot of discovery time. Now, I was living in Sydney at this time, central Sydney, very high level of rent, very unattainable level at that stage because, of course, as we all know, recruitment stopped, unsurety, market, everything was challenged. All I had going for me at that stage was I had booked in yoga teacher training as my first thing I was going to do once I wrapped up my corporate gig. And that was therapy for me. I was like, I'm just going to get a bunch of therapy for a while. I didn't intend on teaching and I got the therapy. I cried a lot in public. It was fantastic. But that was all I had going for me then at that stage. So I had to get entrepreneurial. I had to get something going because I was going to go crazy. I had, you know, high energy and I needed to earn. So I started teaching yoga online. So I went through the process of setting up my website and getting everything, you know, figuring out the process and trying to get friends and family on board and payment systems. And I tried to, you know, make myself a little bit of money to keep myself going. Started looking for roles, started working with a coach again, which was more of a, you know, sort of a life coach. I don't really like that word so much, but, you know, just sort of helping me ascertain my values, ascertain my purpose. And I just felt like super frustrated through that whole period. I think a lot of people have that when they embark on a new journey to find something different for themselves. They feel lost, like that sense of I need to find my purpose and then do that thing and do that thing hard.
Yeah.
I didn't have that. And I didn't have that through this whole period. In the middle of that, my partner and I decided to move to Tasmania because rent in central Sydney, as I said, exorbitant. So we moved somewhere more affordable for us. My partner went full time on his study. So we were able to just bring our lifestyle back financially to the very bare minimum so that we could support ourselves enough so that we could do some exploration. He had a path and he was on that path and he just needed to knuckle down. I needed to figure my shit out. And so figure my shit out. I don't know if I've even done that yet, but went through more of a journey. I started doing plant-based recipe content for clients, for an audience and then for clients. Mm. I learned ceramics and I recreated and released a series of homewares. They were wildly successful. They were in all of the top-end Airbnbs throughout Tasmania and the mainland as well. That's where the name Good Side of the Bed comes from. It's kind of always been a brand name that I've had, and it's just had different faces through my career. And that went really, really well. Not necessarily scalable, still wasn't giving me that thing that I felt really passionate about. It gave me part of the thing. But through this whole period, I just felt like I was really stripping back the layers of myself. I was failing a lot in micro sense. You know, I was confused a lot, you know, small things. How do I do this? I'm even learning ceramics. I say, like, I learned to make ceramics. It was hell trying to figure out how to do it all.
Yeah.
And making terrible things to start with, really average things to get my confidence about what my hands could do. And it was just this constant breakdown and rebuild. And I was doing a lot of work on myself, free work as best as I could through that process, reading books, listening to podcasts. And I would sit there at my homemade ceramics desk table and I'd be making, so I was hand making as opposed to wheel. And I'd have my headphones on and all day long I would listen to podcasts. And audio is quite clearly, based on my history, a medium I'm very passionate about. Mm. I love it. Mm. It's fantastic. I love the energy of it. I love the spoken word. And so I'd listen to podcasts all day long and I was finding some fantastic ones, you know, really great business focus mixed with a bit of self-development is what I was looking for.
Mm.
Now, the problem I encountered was I would listen to a couple of episodes and I would start to notice a bit of a theme. I would start to notice the host being very successful and they had their own story of success that they were leveraging off of in order to talk to other people who were successful. And they could talk about their business success journey. And they would most certainly touch on failures. They would most certainly touch on lessons. But I did start to feel like it was a bit of an echo chamber. And it started to make me feel really bad about myself because I was so far away from that success. You know, I was so far away from the $100,000 launch. Geez, if I hear another six-figure launch, you know, in language, far out. Like, I how boring. I'm fantastic for the people doing it, but cute. Like, how do you get there? And I mean, I was feeling it would make me down on myself. And I was like, that's not how this should feel. I want to know a little bit more about what do you do when you're not entirely sure that that business that you've started is the one for you? What do you do when you feel like you want to put something down, but you've just gone out to quote unquote market your friends, your family, people who might follow you on Instagram as a this quote unquote, you know, ceramicist in my circumstance. And you want to pivot again. How do you tackle that? How do you deal with it when your website doesn't work and you're like, on PayPal, trying to work out this integration and, like, you know, the things you don't know.
When you people get have to do it, I know. Yeah.
You know, everything from the pressures of not being able to outsource your growth. That's certainly been a big part of my journey. I haven't been able to afford a coach or I haven't been able to afford elements that would help me get ahead, content creators on my behalf, you know, things like that, right? So I've been doing this all kind of on my own. And I was like, where is the message to help me get out of bed in the morning and know that if I just get 1% better than yesterday, if I do one task on my endless to-do list of potential growth, that I'm succeeding towards being successful in business? And so that very long story, you're welcome, gets me to the podcast.
Yeah.
Which is, okay, so why can't I create a podcast then? Now, what comes into my narrative is what comes into everybody's narrative when they go into making a podcast. Oh, everybody's got a bloody podcast these days, don't they? Like, I mean, I don't mean to make the Karen voice. Sorry, Karen. But it's that sense of what am I doing? And that self-talk and that self-judgment started to come in again, particularly as I have a background in radio. So I have connections to people who are very successful on air. And I have friends that are very successful off air behind the scenes. And so, you know, oh, little old me going out and starting a podcast, like, what a cliche. What comes next after that? It's kind of a little bit expected. And so it really held me back. But I knew that there was something in it. There was something that was driving me. And it was that same feeling I sort of had when I was like, oh, I've got to leave school. I just got to go. And that same feeling of, oh, I've just got to buy this stupid bloody business and just stuff it up. And I've got to quit my job. You know, that same of that almost blind faith that if I just create this, it's okay. It will get me somewhere. And so I enlisted a lot of support from my network and just kind of threw around the idea that I had, which was talking to business owners at all levels of the phases, those who are just starting, solopreneur freelancers, those that have hit the 100K launches, those that are exiting for high levels, for low levels, those that are balancing too, just all levels of different types of industry and business, the self-employed humans of the world who are making their own way and get real about the experience, hence the name Unemployed and Afraid. Not just representative of me and quite genuinely how I was feeling. But when you're going out and you're doing something for yourself in business, you are not employed by somebody. You're completely you're self-employed. You're unemployed. Self-employed and afraid sounds a little bit shitter than unemployed and afraid, right? We've got to think about our brand. But, you know, you are completely untethered and you are afraid a lot of the time. And that fear can be a really positive thing. It can be a really positive driver, or it can really stop you and break you down. And I wanted to be able to create something that can be there for people in that moment so they feel just seen enough in their personal journey that they keep going and they just keep going and trialing it and know that everything that they're experiencing is okay. So I started thinking, do you know what? Low commitment, a really great human told me, just make six episodes. Like, don't go balls to the wall and be like, I'm going to do a podcast every week for the rest of my life. Just do six episodes, make it a mini series, see how you go. So I planned that out. I did that mini series. I enlisted the help of a production agency in the first instance to get me started because I didn't know how to list my podcast on a hosting platform. I didn't know the behind the scenes of that. I had worked in podcasting because the radio industry has evolved into the audio industry. So had a podcast network as part of the business that I was working at. So I had experience in that, but not technically. I didn't know what I was doing.
And
Lord, there's some technical things. So I had a little bit of help to get started. They set up my channel for me and I hired a graphic designer to do my artwork. And this is all very on the cheap. I say I hired a graphic designer. I was like, can you do this for me for $100? You know, help me out. I, you know, invested as much as I could, which I think was probably around $1,500 at the time to get this started. And very, very shortly after, I just started to notice a shift in my energy. I started to feel more in control. I started to be able to verbalize my ideas and start to test and learn some of these things that I was thinking. And I could see the feedback from the people that I was interviewing being like, yes, I know exactly what you mean with that question. Let me answer it for you. And it started to gain a bit of momentum. So low and slow all the way, which is absolutely the message with podcasting. It is not a medium that you jump into and then next minute you're Joe Rogan. It's just not like that. But low and slow, I've been committed to the process and I've been building this brand, and that has led me to fall back in love with the audio medium. And podcasting has now become my career, from the sense that I am a creator of the Unemployed and Afraid brand and podcast. So I'm nurturing that and building that into a monetization stream, looking for like-minded partners to come onto the show who also love and care about small business owners and their growth, to support me to keep making the damn thing. That's my monetization objective, but also my ideas that I can test, and I'm sort of able to be out and talking about these types of things with amazing people like you on stages, you know, to be like, it's okay to not know what you're doing in business. It's okay to feel weird about calling yourself a business owner. It's weird. The whole experience is weird, but success has so many different layers and different levels. And now I also then work in podcasting for brands. So as you said up front, I work on creating podcast environments with a marketing objective. So a little bit different to what I do for myself, but taking all that knowledge of working with brands in an audio space and helping them make great podcasts that facilitate a need for their business, be it, you know, marketing score uplift in terms of how people feel about them, affinity, be it sales, be it, you know, anything else, from a business owner voicing their own through to a brand creating a podcast brand that lives outside of themselves that they can integrate into. And so now all I do is talk about podcasts all day. It brought me right back to radio.
It's funny. One of the things that I noticed, or a common theme throughout your career and your pathway, is jumping in and not being afraid of being afraid, if that makes sense. Like, that you were able to overcome that fear and use the fear as fuel. What do you think some of the misconceptions are, based on everything you've been through, about small business and some of the people you've spoken to? Because I know there are probably people sitting listening right now that have thought about it. What are some of the misconceptions we should be aware of?
I think the biggest misconception is that the thing that's going to get you there is a great idea and a solid business plan. I think, business plans aside, of which I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of personally, but I see their value in certain instances. I think what is underestimated in that is the personal journey that's required as part of it. The biggest thing that I've learned from all the business owners I've spoken to, and also being one myself, is there's three major areas personally that you need to deal with and you need to head on deal with to be successful, whatever success looks like for you when you're out on your own doing your own thing. The biggest one is identity. So when you make a shift from something you've always done to something you're about to do, particularly from the jump of corporate or employee through to self-employed and building something, that identity shift is massive. You know, you can go into a workplace, and workplaces absolutely have their challenges, like huge challenges. But you can go into a workplace and you can have a performance review and you can get some positive feedback. And your boss can say to you, do you know what, keep it this another 9 months and we might, you know, have a talk about that next role, that next promotion, you know. Or alternatively, you can talk to an employee and you can really help them with a challenge and feel really good about that. You can hit a budget. You can do all these things, right? You get wins and you feel good about the work that you're doing. There is two-fifths of fuck all in wins when it comes to starting your own business. You know, they're few and far between. And so you sort of don't get as much of that identity uplift. Like, you don't see yourself as, yeah, I do this and I do this well. And you have to almost take back ownership of that and being like, well, I am somebody who is building something. That is what I am doing. And that's a really challenging thing to talk to people about at a party or a networking event, saying, what do I do? And you sort of have to describe your business when you're trying to figure it out. You know, it's a real challenge. And identity in everything, how you present yourself to the world. All of a sudden, if you find yourself in business, 90% of the time, you're going to have to be also building your personal branded market. So that might mean going to networking events, talking about it. That might mean making some quote unquote cringe content for Instagram and putting yourself out there and knowing that the people you worked with, your friends, your family are seeing that and are like, who's this chick? You know, like, what's this? You know, and that fear of how people are viewing and how you're seen, it's all part of that identity shift. And that's something I think people really underestimate and maybe don't get themselves enough resources, free, paid or otherwise, to support themselves through that. The next thing is ego. I mean, your ego hits the floor, you know that, when you do this gig. And that's a real challenge. That was a really challenging experience for me, someone who has gone through a corporate career quite quickly and been in a role that was really fantastic and had the opportunity to stand on stages and talk and be seen as successful. Then to not have anything and be really confused is a huge ego shift. Just as much as it is trying to put out that cringe content. Like, I mean, you try and talk on camera for the first time when you're, you know, getting yourself out there, and just the judgment and of you have of yourself is so brutal. And so letting that ego go is a real journey. It's just, you know, you do it a little bit, you get a bit better. You do it a little bit, but it hurts so much the whole way through. And the last thing is probably habits. That's been a really key theme that's come through. So the habits you have before you undertake this journey have a very different effect on your life when you're out doing your own thing. Now, this can look like anything from how you organize yourself, how you find success in a to-do list. I mean, we've probably all had to-do lists that never end, whether you're corporate or self-employed or otherwise, but it's extreme. Like, there is no off.
Oh, the to-do list when you are running a business, you have to get comfortable that you are not going to finish that list. I say this to my team all the time. I'm very conscious that there's going to be a to-do list and it's going to carry over to tomorrow, because there is no single possible way that you can get through everything on it. I don't know about you, but I found that as a real shift, because I liked to get through everything. I was a driver. I was a deliverer. That makes it hard.
Were you somebody that also would do a task and then go back and write it on your list so that you could tick it off?
Yes. I like ticking things off.
He doesn't love to do that.
I do.
And, you know, you can have, you know, all the important tasks on your list, and then something comes up, like, you know, I was making the joke about PayPal integration. It was a thing that happened to me when I first launched my ceramics, and someone tried to buy something and it didn't bloody work. So, you know, you can have this plan for the day and then everything goes to hell. But there's like those habits that you get into in how you work, you know, task, task, tick, tick, that then changes. So, you know, that's one of the more positive examples I have of that, though. Might maybe one of the more attainable, easy ones to work on. Habits such as how you treat your body, how you treat your mind, the things that you do for yourself to get yourself like fighting fit. Now, I was somebody who worked in media, and I stretched the media environment to the nth degree. I went to all the parties. I sent it. You know, I had a good time. I drank. There's free booze everywhere. You work in an office with a bar. Everything entertaining clients is about drinking, and it's about socializing. And so I did all of that. And now that might be appropriate for that environment. If you try to take that same energy into working for yourself, you're going to find it really hard. I found it really hard. And so I've been sober. Sobriety is a big part of my life. I've been sober for over 3 years now. It's the best thing I ever did for myself, is just taking that out, because you don't need the socialization as much. And, you know, so therefore it just becomes more of a negative. So, you know, I'm big fan of sobriety, big fan of casual sobriety, big fan of just watching those sorts of things, the things that you intake. Same with coffee. You're over caffeinating all the time. Like, it's really hard to maintain a sense of focus in the day. The dips are too hard. The dips are too painful.
So yes.
Habits like that, but also, I mean, people talk a lot about meditation. I steer away because it sounds like preaching. You know, even the alcohol and the coffee can edge into that. And I'm conscious of that it's not for everybody to go hard down a path of avoidance. But, and meditation falls into that same thing. Like, meditate and everything will be better. No, it most certainly won't. But if you do take a time for yourself to just not think and not do, it does help you a lot. And so if you don't already have that habit in place, putting that habit in when you work for yourself is really important. But just being conscious of what you consume. If you see a lot of successful people on Instagram all day long, people admitting their success, you know, broadly, widely, it can be either really inspiring or really depleting. And it's hard to differentiate when you're in the scroll hole. And so blocking out a little bit of that is a habit that, you know, can really help to kind of get in as an unlearning habit that you have to do. Watching what you read, watching what you watch, like just being really cognizant of who's in your life as well. You know, who is propping you up? Who isn't propping you up? Most of your friends and family won't understand what you're going through. No. Unless you've got business buds, which are just like the greatest gift ever.
Yes.
They're not going to get it. And so they're like, oh, well, that's okay. You just got to keep trying. Or, well, you know, you can always go back and go to work if this doesn't work out. Or, what have you been up to? And you sort of try to explain it, and it's like, oh, I literally spent the last 8 hours trying to work out how to send an invoice in Xero. Like, that's not very fun to talk about, but it's a reality. So that habit becomes a really big part about it. And I think just not enough is the personal journey talked about when it comes to business. And it's a part that I'm really passionate about because I think it makes or breaks. You can have the best business plan. You can have VC backing, financial backing. You can have product market fit on point. And then if you still don't have some of those other things worked out, some of those personal habits aligned to what's going to work for you in your life, if you haven't got your ego in check in certain ways, whether it be amp it up, get more ego, or pull it down, if you haven't got your identity sorted, you don't feel solid in you, it's going to be really hard and it's going to surprise you how hard it is. It definitely surprised me.
I don't know if you experienced this, but for me, everything that I had had in a corporate career was amplified when I was self-employed. So if I was driven, I was extra driven, can't sleep at night. If I was anxious sometimes, I felt extra anxious. So those qualities that I'd had that had served me well in a corporate career, you had to manage as well as ego, because all of a sudden, you're right, you don't have that fallback of going into a job and things being set out that you've got those client meetings. It's like, oh, how can I network and collaborate and still get the work done? Like that constant juggle that you don't deal with in the same extent when you're working for someone else.
You're so right. And decision fatigue. Everything is a micro decision. I don't know why I can't say decision today. There we go. But you know, everything is something you have to think about. You know, oh, okay, so if I want to get my end goal is PR, I've got to do these 18 steps to get to it. So yeah, you've got that. You have no choice but to take that driven sense of self that you had as a corporate employee, and you've got to amp it up and you've got to be driven when there's no reward.
Yes.
As well. Like that's, you get crickets 90% of the time. Then you get a huge win. You're like, oh, that'll see me through for a month. Let me just dine out on that. But I agree with you that the tendencies you tend to have in your corporate career certainly are amplified, and there's no one really to keep you in check. I mean, for somebody who has the benefit of a co-founder, perhaps that's not the same experience, but it's really hard to be kept in check when you're running the show. But that's also what's fantastic about it. You do also get the opportunity to make your own decisions and run your own life. I joke a lot about the fallacy that people think, oh, I'm going to work for myself because I'm going to control my own schedule. That's such a
cute.
It's so cute. Even if your business is just building and it's not necessarily a full delivery of client work or a full delivery of meetings or whatever it is, you're thinking about it all day long and on the weekend. And it's, you know, that difference between like what managing your own schedule sounds like and feels like versus what it actually is, which is like, yes, last week I didn't work on Thursday at all. I kept all my day clear and I decided not to work. And that was because it was the only day I had with my partner. So then I worked on the weekend, you know, so it, like you do have that autonomy, but the work doesn't go anywhere. It does mean then you don't follow the normal quote unquote route of like 8 to 5 lunch breaks, thirsty Thursday, and Friday knockoffs, woo, Saturday sleep in, you know, like none of that happens. It's just completely different.
There is something as well. There is a need to be calm when things aren't calm. It's like, that's the part that I struggled with as well, is to know that I didn't have any sense of certainty, but I had to remain calm throughout that as well, or try to remain calm when you might have things like things that people don't think about, late invoices. You can have payment dates. Doesn't mean people are going to pay on time.
Nope.
The cash flow and all of those other aspects of a business, P&L, staff dealing with dramas, all of those sort of facets you don't think of when you're starting a business, but they are definitely the things that make it so challenging. I want to talk more around delving also into your working with brands, because I know a common thing that's coming up with me all the time talking to clients is when you can't find staff, or when you're struggling to attract people to your business or attract clients to your business, this brand identity, it's actually, in particular in construction where we do a lot of work, it's something that I think businesses struggle with. So tell me a lot more around what are some of the common mistakes you see brands make that you are often correcting in your job?
When it comes to podcasting?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I think the biggest mistake is leading into it without valuing the reason you want to do it just as high as the value you'll be providing the people who are consuming it. And so you can come into a decision to make a podcast, and there's so many ways that you can end up there. You know, you'll sit in a marketing seminar and someone will say podcasting is the most engaging medium because people are spending 20 to 40 minutes a day with you. They're choosing you. They feel an affinity with your host, with your message. And all of these metrics get spouted and they're all very true. But you take that and then go, okay, so great, I'm going to start a podcast. And it's going to do all those things for my business. But the reason that podcasting has such an engaging return on investment is because you're creating something that's valuable for an audience. Mm. And so as quickly as you come to the decision of a podcasting could be for me because it will get me out there, it will increase my personal brand, it will show my thought leadership, it will create more engagement, the million reasons that you come to it, as you said, it'll highlight our employee brand. Who's going to listen to it and why are they going to listen to it? Mm. And how hard are you going to work to get them to listen to it? See, the thing is that's different about podcasting is it's not like on Instagram where you've got an explore page, you know, things kind of like fed to you because you're interested in them. Mm. You know, it's not like sort of algorithmic like that. Discovery is usually done by word of mouth or hard yard marketing, like just putting it out there, using your social media, using your network, using as many interesting things as you can, getting into like, I'm big in Reddit communities. I have the best time in there because, you know, I'm in there helping small business owners being like, hey, have you thought about this? Like, I've heard this thing, blah, blah, blah. I've got a great podcast you could listen to.
Value.
And yeah. So when you come into making a podcast, there is an element of commitment required to it. It really is. It's content marketing and you have to think of it like that. Mm. If you were creating a magazine for your business, you know, old school, but also magazines are fantastic because they're tactile. But if you're creating a magazine for your business, what would you put in there? You wouldn't just put ads about yourself. You wouldn't just talk about yourself. Mm. And if you're a skincare brand who wants to create a, you know, magazine, you're not necessarily going to just make a magazine about skincare, are you? And it'd be just that. You've got to think a little bit more laterally about what your audience might want to hear about. Mm. So I'll take the skincare analogy one step further. If you're a skincare brand that is also really focused on your supply chain, for example, and really passionate about the industry and the industry knowing where its supply chain is and why and what is the effect of people, you know, humans farming for this product and all of that, right? Now, that's a topic that people could get into, you know, understanding where things come from, the history of certain ingredients. People that are in kind of that skincare frame of mind are a little bit more passionate about it. They might get into that niche. Yeah. So that could be fun. That could be something to explore. Mm. And so you could just talk about that and really focus it on that and then allow your brand message to come through in really unique ways. You know, just have it as a very simple ad, you know, an integrated ad in there somewhere, a mid-roll. The reason we're so passionate about this is blah, you know. But, you know, back to your question around what problems or what things do I sort of come in and fix? It's just not spending enough time being strategic in that sense. And being strategic is a very sweeping statement. How do you be strategic? But it's about thinking about the medium from start to finish, understanding the history of it. Where has it come from? Oh, it's a brand new medium. No, it's 20 years old. It's not brand new. It's been around for ages. And there are a lot we can learn from podcasts we hate. And so, you know, you got to go in and listen to Joe Rogan. Lord, no, if you like Joe Rogan, fantastic for you. I do not. But, you know, I will listen to his pods and, you know, learn about it because he's a big podcast. A lot of people listen to it. Let me understand why. Let me understand his techniques. Let me understand his engagement. Mm. You have to listen to podcasts outside of your area. You have to think about the genres that you could fall within. Like, if you're a skincare brand wanting to get in the space, why do you have to just go for an interview style podcast? Could you do narrative storytelling? Could you do something really different? You know, could you do something historical, the history of skincare through the ages? Or, you know, could you take Cleopatra and her milk baths and talk about that for a while? Getting really obsessed with the medium is a really great way to embrace it. And taking that through, then thinking, okay, I know my audience. Most people know their customers, their ideal customers. Most people know their brand persona. Get cultural around those guys. What are those guys culturally interested in? It can be something really on the outskirts of your own content pillars, really out there. This said skincare brand might also have a really high interest in packaging, for example. I mean, that's still kind of in the outskirts. Let me go like a bit more random. It could be influencers, you know, they might have a real issue with skincare influencers and the legalities that are coming in place around it right now. So maybe they talk around that and it's finding that cultural insight and then building your podcast concept from that and having a bit of a plan in place before you hit go. For everything in terms of your podcast planning is an opportunity for strategy. Who hosts it? Now, naturally, if you want to be a thought leader or if you want to raise your personal brand, the person who runs the business, they're going to want to be involved in the pod in some way.
Yeah.
Why can't they have a co-host? Mm. Would that add more dynamic? Would that be more interesting?
Mm.
Or why can't they, a lot of the bigger brands that I have worked with, they have opted to not have anybody internal from their business actually lead the podcast, but to find a really great influential host in the subject area that they're talking about to lead it and own it.
Mm.
So they're creating a brand and a brand environment that they own and can put their messaging into, but it's, you know, it's not led by them, and they're some of the most successful.
Mm.
So it's about thinking about all of that before you get into it, and then knowing that podcasting is about consistency.
Mm.
It is consistency of release. It is patience. It's massive patience. Now, if you come into the scene with a big audience already, and this is why you see so many podcasters starting by influential people or influencers, because they've got a built-in audience.
Yeah.
So a lot of networks will go, fantastic, let's get you on, let's find your cultural insight, let's find your niche, and let's create a podcast because we know we can sell you.
Yeah.
So you've got an audience built in. Most people don't have that.
No.
And so it is about consistency, and it's about using as many of your marketing opportunities as you can. Like, use your LinkedIn, use your Insta, use your Facebook, make your friends and family share the damn thing. Pitch yourself to Apple, pitch yourself in PR, get on TikTok. You have to market the damn thing. You've got to be really passionate about it, and not just, here's a new episode and this is why you should listen to it.
Mm.
You've got to be a little bit more unique. It's content marketing, like we all have to retrain ourselves to do. It's finding something, an idea, and then building some content around it and then pushing back to the pod, you know, and that's consistent. So the biggest thing I think I find I'm working with clients about is teaching them all of that.
Mm.
And sometimes that can result in the person very rightly going, underestimated this commitment, and maybe it's not for me right now. And that's perfectly okay. And so there might be, you know, energy best spent elsewhere. But there is no denying that the impact of a really great podcast on an audience who's consuming it and the uplift that a brand can achieve from that is pretty incomparable.
One of the things I'm really interested about, because people talk a lot about this in content marketing and they talk about it when you're doing your research for the podcast. How do you know? I'll use an analogy of a client. Say I'm like a construction client and I've really struggled to find engineers, and I really want to promote my medium-sized business to that industry. How do I, and what are the tips you give or ways that they can research what their target demographic wants to hear? How do you go about that research? Because that, to me, seems to me a big barrier that a lot of people often face, is what do the people I want to reach out to want to hear?
So one of the hardest things with creative strategy is the fact that there is no straight answer with these things. Like most creative messaging, how did the guys working on KFC get to shut up and take my money? You know, they didn't Google it and find an insight there. They worked on it.
Yeah.
And we're creative humans. It's about putting as many inputs in as we can and then making new connections to make something land. But the first step in there is to think about the person that you want to speak to. Think about their daily habits. Think about what they might do, not what you want to achieve and what you want them to know about you, but think about what they're doing in their day. What time are they waking up? Where are they working out? What do they probably drink? What's their pain points? What's their pleasure points? What makes them really happy? Just think about it from a humanistic point of view. And if you don't know, go ask them. Go find people in your demographic and ask them some key questions. You know, what does your day look like? What sort of media do you consume? What do you wish there was more of? You know, and yeah, they might say bloody wrestling, or they might say, oh, I'd really like it if there were more tennis on the telly. I don't know, like terrible. But you start to hear some of these insights and you start to make a bit of a picture of what people really want and how you can then answer a problem for them. So say that that same person, an engineer or something, you know, say that they're really struggling with finding upskilling that's at their level, right? So say that they're like a mid to high level and all of the upskilling educational things that are targeted to somebody a little bit younger who's just starting out their career. You know, I think that probably happens in a lot of STEM industries because they're trying to attract people in.
Yeah.
But say that they are looking at getting more upskilling, but they feel like they get talked down to a little bit. You know, that's a rich opportunity. So then just start educating them in that space. Start finding people who will come on and talk about certain areas of their profession or certain innovations in their profession. And that person is going to feel very happy that they have found something to fix that problem.
Yeah.
And then your brand fits in later. You figure that out later. You figure that out in unique ways. You figure it out in your intro. Hey, you know, my name is blah, 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 blah. I'm here to help you answer this problem. if you want to hear more, head to the blah, blah, blah blog. We've done a little bit more on this for you.
Mm.
And then you see them and then you get their email and you drop them in your cycle and, you know, things start to happen from there. So it's not a direct answer of go to this website and learn this. And, yeah, you can go to Australian Bureau of Statistics. You can go to a million places to get insights, and you can just Google insights in engineering and you'll get hit with a lot. I really like to engage with as many cultural insights as I possibly can that are super abstract. And now this is just something that I've practiced for a long time and I really enjoy. So I'm in a creative marketing industry, a credible agency, TVWA. They do this thing every year called a backslash report. Mm. And it's just, it's cultural trends, you know, kind of pulled together that are really interesting. And they can be so very random. Maybe it's VR travel is one that they're like, oh, and this is all the reasons why this is like a potential trend. You know, it could be last year, cannabis adoption was a big one. And, you know, what that's going to look like for economies around the world. Like, you know, these are like not trends. They're just cultural energies. Mm. You know, community was a big one and getting to know your neighbours, gardening in small spaces, things like that. I engage with all of that because you just never know where it's going to come in handy for what I do, but also because it's damn interesting. And so you have to show an interest in life and people.
Where do you find out about these cultural trends?
So you can literally go to Backslash is my favourite one.
I'll
link it to you. So it's a report that's done once a year. I think it's in March once a year and they publish it out. Creative agencies, media agencies are a wealth of information.
Yeah.
I mean, advertising agencies, well, the job is to understand cultural movements, cultural insights,
absolutely,
human insights, and to get us to buy stuff. And so they're a fantastic place to start. So, you know, maybe engage with some creative agencies. You know, maybe just go deep on Reddit. Ask Reddit. Mm. Ask Reddit a question. See what comes back. Oh, Lord, don't go advertising yourself to, obviously, you will get ripped to shreds in Reddit. But ask questions in there. It's a wealth of information. Put something in Google and then scroll down a little bit and see what other questions were come up. You know that little bit when you scroll down, you drop down? Go on a rabbit hole. Just go on a random rabbit hole. Read articles about the industry that by other businesses. It's patience. And then just don't think about it for a minute. You know, just let it all kind of percolate a little bit. If you know you want to get to a, you want to get some insights that are going to get you to a strategy or to a concept rather, give yourself a little bit of time.
Mm.
Don't expect to get it in one meeting. Don't get your eight best staff in a room and go, right, guys, the end of this meeting, we're going to come up with a podcast concept because you're going to get shit ideas.
Mm.
Give it time and have as many inputs as you can.
So much of what you're saying resonates with me recently having, so a lot of senior leaders that I've spoken to of late looking to embark on consulting businesses. It's a bit of a movement because we've got the Olympics coming up. We've got an increase in infrastructure opportunities. And then post-COVID, there has been a shift to some people being a little more open to going, you know what, I highly value autonomy and I want to move down that pathway. There's a few things that you touched on there that I think were really important throughout this episode. One is that you don't need a business plan. The other is just some insight to know how to go to your market and be able to research ways to reach out to them and connect with them through podcasting and understanding what they consume. The other question I wanted to ask you, because I think this is a barrier too, before you go and start a business, and I think this is interesting with what you've done, did you already have partnerships in place or an idea, or did you just go at it and cold call? Because I want to talk about it and like take it back to bare bones, because I feel like there's this misconception that you have to go out and cold call everybody. What did you have in place when you went to go start this podcast? How did you build, get the guests on, build the connections? What did you leverage?
And this is a theme that has come through in many people I've spoken to. Your first 100 customers will be people that you already know. And that could be by two levels of connection. So my first podcast guest was a dear friend that I've known for a long time. I conned her into coming in and just being my crash test dummy. She was amazing. And she was also helping me just kind of get my confidence up. The next person was somebody I had listened to on a friend's podcast that I said, would you mind introducing me to that person so I could have them come on? And then everybody else for the next phase were people that I knew for the next sort of like four or five guests. And it might be people that I knew through Instagram. I was making ceramics at the time, so I happened to have a connection to a few people who owned their own Airbnb. So I picked out one. I was very interested in her career journey. And so I reached out to her and said, look, I know we've just done ceramics together, but I'm just starting this podcast. Could you get involved with that? I think all of us underestimate how broad our network is. And that could be either immediate. So if you're somebody who's ever engaged into LinkedIn, not necessarily like now LinkedIn is like my favorite place to play and you can have huge reach and huge impact in that space. But like right back in the day, if you had just started your LinkedIn and then you had a few connections on there, you'd be surprised who's in there. So go in and have a look, like filter through that and put a message out. Hey, I'm looking for guests that have this, 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 and this. Could you get around me a little bit? Can you help me out? But ask for help, ask friends, call someone, be like, do you know anyone in this industry you could introduce me for? This is it. Cold calling is part of it. Mm. I've cold pitched so many guests to be on my podcast. Thankfully, I've only ever had one person say no, and it wasn't a no. It was a like no right now, but you're going to get rejected in that space too. But I think I'm very like my podcast. I take the position of equal, not expert in everything that I do for the pod, because I think we just have enough megaphoners telling us what we're doing wrong every day and how to do it right that I can't handle hearing it anymore. And I'm sure my listeners and guests can't either. And so I always go in really vulnerable. This is a new podcast, but this is its purpose. And this, you know, right back when it was first starting, this is what I'm hoping to achieve. Would you like to be part of it and have a conversation with me? Who's going to say no to that?
No.
It's pretty rare.
One thing you said before, which was really interesting, was around the ego side of it. So when you start the business, that ego, you've got to let go of that, be able to ask for help. Definitely can resonate to that. And I think too many people feel that there's that level of vulnerability because you're responsible for your own income and therefore you need to be vulnerable with people and say, hey, I would love your help. If you can refer anyone my way or as a guest, that would be some of the greatest guests you get are referred by other people, right? Because they were a great guest and they refer someone equally great for your podcast. But the other thing that you touched on a couple of times, I want to talk about it because it came up. I interviewed, she's an Olympian now, but I interviewed Marissa a few episodes back. One of the things she brought up, and I really wanted to touch on it with you because she's an Olympian. She went from being homeless to going to the Olympics to represent Australia for boxing, right? So this is someone with a really strong mindset. She talked about toxic positivity. And she said to me, some of what we see in podcasts, reels, is these people saying, I've got this $100,000 launch, or I'm a multimillionaire and you can be too, and get off your ass and go and do this. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me more around where a drive against that came from for you, because it's clearly, you've mentioned a couple of times, so I wanted to delve into it a little bit.
Yeah, no, very perceptive of you. It's something I'm thinking about a lot lately, and I'm thinking of it in a juxtaposition because I am also putting my years of knowledge into a offering or a DIY course for business owners and brands who want to create their own podcast. I'm putting my brain as much as I can into an offering for people to go do that themselves, and then also offering my time. Now, this is just, it's as my business evolves, I'm consulting, and then I'm also like, well, I'm going to have a cap on how much time I can do. So how can I help people do it themselves, right? So I'm thinking about a course, and now this is a course essentially teaching people how to create a podcast concept, or teaching brands and business owners how to create a podcast concept. So where I'm going with this is, all of a sudden I have a course and I really hate being marketed courses to all day long, because I have spent the last 3 years thinking that I don't know enough and I need to pay somebody else to help me get there. And this is internet discourse. This is just Instagram and TikTok discourse. Is like, I mean, TikTok, if you want to succeed on TikTok in 2024, here's the three things you need to know. Fuck, watch it every damn time because I can't help myself. The hook is so strong. And so you end up going through this process of feeling really distrustful of your own voice throughout that period. So I'm grappling with that juxtaposition of being really against the toxic positivity, the toxic teach. And if you do this thing, you will achieve your $30,000 launch, your $100,000 launch. Oh, yeah. It's those promises that I can't get around. Now, the thing is, one of the biggest markers of success for people who are going out and launching a coaching business or launching a consulting business is social proof. So I understand why internet coaches, and I'm like, okay, I don't mean to make it sound offensive. There are fantastic internet coaches out there. There are fantastic people offering courses out there, but there's a lot of shit to wade through as well.
Yes.
So I understand why they're coming out with these big messages, because it's like, you've got to hook them. You've got to hook people to engage with the rest of your message to convert. But there's such a falsity to so much of it. Like, big numbers as the markers of success, but it's like, why can't we just achieve to be or strive to be a little bit better, or just to get like that thing, that piece of knowledge that we need from somebody who has been there and done that? And I don't mean somebody who has done a 6-week course and is then teaching you how to do the thing that they just learned. I mean somebody who's had skin in the game for a while, sharing knowledge and sharing information. I'm constantly trying to find the difference between that, and in particular with how I'm going to market myself, and how I do market myself, and the megaphoners, which is a term I borrow from an incredible woman who I just love, Mia Farman, and she talks about this a lot. I interviewed her for the pod and we just really got into it with these seven-figure megaphoners because, yeah, a lot of it is crap and essentially they're just trying to hook you and make you think that you're not good enough to fund their own business. And it's a really challenging space to navigate in because as a small business owner, you're so desperate for answers. You're so desperate for someone to help you because it's so very challenging. And it's just really hard to differentiate between somebody who's selling you and somebody whose advice you actually need. And now I'm not sure if that's answered your question directly because as you can tell, I get super passionate about it and I go on a mad tangent just being like, this is an example of the constant juggle or juxtaposition act that we have where we're like, this is important, like knowledge sharing is important and learning from other people is important. But when do I get to the stage of knowing what it is that I actually need? And when do I trust myself enough to try, even if I stuff it up at first or waste a bit of time and money? Like, when do I trust myself?
I don't know why this has all come together for me right now, but it has, because I had a conversation on my way to work this morning with an executive that I placed in a role in Melbourne. And she made this comment to me. She said, I don't understand why I still feel sometimes like an imposter in my role. Like I don't feel like I'm enough. Why is that? Is that a woman thing? I don't know if it is or if it's not. But for me, I definitely feel this. Where did this come from? So lo and behold, we got chatting. I said, well, think about the undercurrent of what you've seen since a child. So as a woman, we see that in the beauty industry, we need products to make us look better. We need anti-aging. We need cosmetic surgery. We need clothes. We need all of this stuff to be beautiful, to be perfect, right? Then we go into the workforce or we go out and start our own business. And then those pressures again to get it right and to be perfect. And then so the very things that we've been played into by influencers, Instagram, the beauty industry or whatever you call it, mainstream media will tell us that we're not enough. And it's so fascinating now that that undercurrent's now moved into Instagram in the self-help space and in the leadership space. So they've cottoned on, if we can make you feel like you don't know enough and that you're not enough to have a successful business without following our formula, then that's how we're going to hook you. And I totally agree. And I'm passionate about the same things you are. In terms of the podcast, and the reason I wanted to do this podcast is there's no one version of success. You don't need to be, I'm the mum of two kids and my version of success is having a role where I make money and I see my kids. Like that's really important to me and it's different for everyone else. You want to do a podcast and you want to commit 110% because you're so passionate about podcasting and that's what comes through as well. And I think everyone's story is different, but when we're told through social media that we're not enough, I don't know about you, but I limit my time in consuming content because it does have that impact. And I'm sorry, I had to talk about it because just it was all making that connection for me from that discussion this morning, because I just think we just need to be careful what we consume on Instagram and what we're telling ourselves.
I couldn't agree more. And firstly, it's really polite that you assumed that I don't have a screen time of about 3 hours a day. So thank you for that. That is wrong. I spend far too much time in this space because I struggle with that thing of like, there's an aspect of business in it for me, you know, yes. Cultural understanding, connection, you know, all of that. There's an element of that. And then all of a sudden I'm down a black hole. But, you know, coming back to that point that you made around toxic positivity, we see a lot of that. Yes, absolutely. But we have to look at it from the perspective of what you just said, which is like women are told that we need this makeup, this filler, this whatever to look better. Somebody is always selling us something, no matter who it is. Somebody is always selling us something. And now the thing we have to train ourselves to look through is the thing that they're selling coming from a proposition or a place of like value. Because we live in it's economy, right?
Yeah.
Like we have to get paid. Everybody has to get paid to live in this world. Mm. It's annoying, but we all have to earn money. So in these environments, everybody is selling us something. And it's just about peeling back a little bit of that layer and going, what is the value and who is this person? Who are they at their core? And what I think is super challenging is because you talked about confidence there. You talked about, I just don't feel like I'm doing well, you know, in this job. Like we are all trying to project a better version of ourselves. And that's something I'm also really passionate about, trying not to do too much. And, you know, hence unemployed and afraid, hence leaning into the feels. You know, in my corporate career, I was told that I had way too many feelings. And, you know, I couldn't necessarily come into a boardroom and be now my passion worked when I was selling something, let me tell you. But when I came into a boardroom environment, I'm a bit too passionate. Let's just pull that back a little bit. Just be a little bit more, quote unquote, professional. So, you know, tangent. But it's all about finding who someone is in order to want to buy from them, first of all, but also to trust yourself a little bit about letting people into who you are when you're trying to do something. So, like, you know, to that person you were just talking about, if they feel like that they're doing everything they can and they're still not achieving, that's okay to talk about. You know, finding the people to talk to about that, whether it be a therapist, a leader, a business friend, a best friend, something like that, being honest about the things that we're struggling with is just a huge part about it. You know, showing an element of realness and an element of vulnerability will make you better in every sense. And I know the whole fake it till you make it. I get that. And I have definitely had to fake it till I've made it in a few circumstances where I was like, totally shitting myself and outside of, you know, on the very edge of my comfort zone, trying something new. There's an element of it, but it's when that gets toxic. So like that, I can help you make $100,000 in your launch. You might have done that once, maybe twice, but you're not going to do that every time. Don't make promises you can't keep, you know, be real and be like, you know, I have done this before and I will work with you to get you as close as we can. But like, why can't that be the sell? I know it's not as sexy, but why can't that be the sell? Yeah. Show a little bit about who we are on both sides, whether we're selling to somebody or whether we're trying to understand ourselves a little bit better. Like just take some of that makeup off, let yourself be seen a little bit more.
Love it. So with all the work that you've been doing in the podcast and your career, what is your guiding purpose or your deeper purpose? Because you spoke about searching for purpose through so many different avenues that you've explored, and now you're obviously really passionate about what you do. What's the deeper purpose that underpins that?
The personal deeper purpose is probably like autonomy in every sense of the word, to be free enough to be able to explore my ideas. I don't doubt for a second that I will have more business ideas and that they will probably be completely random and very difficult to link narratively to any kind of audience. I have no doubt that something will come up, and I want to be free enough to be able to explore that and explore what that will do for my personal sense of growth. I just want to grow as and change and evolve and embrace myself and learn about myself as much as I possibly can. Career is a big part about how I do that. I love to work. That sounds really nerdy, I know. But I think through work, we can learn so much about ourselves. And so working for myself and exploring all these business ideas, like that's just the ultimate. So that sense of true autonomy and personal value from that, being able to explore my ideas, like I 100% have visions. This is a side note. I have visions of being like 70-year-old Margaret Atwood, you know, in my little house in the forest. I'm typing away novels. You know, that's a big dream. Super different to podcasting and branded podcast concepting and strategy that I'm doing right now. Super different. But that's going to be part of my life at some stage. So that's a big driving purpose for me, is the freedom and the autonomy to be able to explore my ideas. Now, in order to be able to do that, I need to be financially stable and secure and financially independent. And that's a big driving force for me as well. But I only want to achieve both of those things if I can provide value to people as well. I want to do work that provides value to the people that are consuming. And I don't mean this on a mass level, right? So like, how valuable really in the grand scheme of the entire world is doing a branded podcast really well? It's not really, like, it's not a charitable thing, you know, it's not an amazing thing that's adding to the world in some way, shape or form. But if I can make someone really confident to create a piece of work that they're proud of, that's super valuable to me. And if I can share knowledge that's been hard fought for, that's super valuable for me. So autonomy and value are definitely the two things that are driving me, and freedom, just freedom.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Everybody can find meaning in the work that they do if you look hard enough too. Like if you're passionate about it, you're going to be impacting more people than you know. Every small business owner that listens to the podcast, myself included, to get that extra bit of inspiration on those tough days, a medium that's very much needed in the market. Look, I'm going to delve into the rocket round now because I want to learn just a little bit more about Kim. Now we've delved into all things business and podcast. So tell me about your favorite book.
So funny. I have a real recency bias with my books because I do read a lot. And it's so funny because you just said Rocket Round. The book I just finished was Elon Musk's book, but I'm not going to say it was my favorite, but I am going to say it's worth a read and it's deeply, deeply interesting. I think some of my favorite books have been How to Change Your Mind. by Michael Pollan. It's all about the psychedelic research from the 60s, like through to today, and just understanding ego and identity and all those things. I found that deeply fascinating. Fictionally, Normal People.
Yeah.
That's only really, but it's a cracker read.
I should get into fiction.
You really should.
Favorite holiday destination?
Oh, well, I live in the Sunshine Coast, so I feel like, and I haven't been there very long, so I feel like that feels like a permanent holiday to me. Just everything's new and different. But if it wasn't home, New York City.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Yeah, I love New York. Cats or dogs?
Doggos. Pugs, specifically.
Oh, I have a foster pug at the moment.
Pug people.
I'll show you my foster pug after the episode, but we've got her. She's hilarious. Are they always intense and love food?
Oh, completely food driven. Okay. I can open a peanut butter jar from three rooms away and my dog will bolt. And she can differentiate the sound of peanut butter to Vegemite.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very
clever.
Food driven.
They also like love to hug you like 5 centimeters from your face.
Yeah. There's a lot of love.
The clowns of the animal world.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee or wine?
Neither.
Well, we did talk about that before.
Yeah. I don't drink coffee.
Green tea?
I don't. No. I'm a real English breakfast with oat milk gal or a chai latte.
Yeah. Nice. Yes, and should know the chai latte, had that before. And what podcast are you listening to right now?
Oh, so many. Again, I can't give you just one because I did listen three on the drive down.
Wow.
Just dipping in and out of a couple. So from an industry perspective, I listen to Podcast Perspectives. It's a great one from the creator of Podglomerate, which is a great business out of the States. Really love that one. Black Magic Woman by Mundanara Bales. Incredible podcast. Really, really engaging conversations.
Mm.
And I tried to start one on the way down here called Can Marketing Change the World? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right up my alley. So I'm giving that a go at the moment. Production value is shaking me a little bit from the recent episode, so I'm going to stick with it because I think the content will be really great.
With the Black Magic podcast, what's it about, that podcast?
So Mundanara is an incredible First Nations woman who does a lot of cultural awareness training, and she has recently started a great podcast network called Blackcast, which is fantastic. And so she is chatting to other incredible First Nations humans about their life, their work, their successes, their challenges, and just has really beautiful conversation, a lot of storytelling, a lot of story sharing. And she's just a real light.
Yeah, she's sounds great. Here. And what makes you feel like you're home?
Oh, what makes me feel like I'm home? Do you know, a pantry full of food really makes me feel like I'm at home. I love to cook. So when I know I've got a pantry and a fridge full of food and I can just get in and the couch is right there and I've got my loved ones around me, that is, no matter what house I'm in, if I've got people I love and a fridge full of food, I'm stoked.
Love that. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How can we support you? Listeners will be listening. How can we learn more about the work that you do and support you? What are some of the mediums or avenues we can get on board with that?
Oh, thank you for asking. It's always another lesson for business owners. Promoting yourself feels awkward all the time. So I'm working on it. So thank you for asking. Well, you can listen to my podcast, Unemployed and Afraid, if you're an aspiring business owner or a current business owner, no matter what stage you're at, we get right stuck into the real feels about the journey. And you always, I promise, will learn something and feel seen in the conversations we have. So you can listen on all of the platforms. My work as a podcast strategist, you can find me at goodsideofthebed.com.au. I work on a consulting format, so one-to-one workshops. So if you're a marketing team behind a big brand, you can get me in to talk about how to create a podcast concept that will deliver. And very soon I will have, perhaps by the time this podcast has launched, I will have a course for brands and business owners to create a podcast concept that will absolutely nail it.
Where will the course be? We can link to it in the comments, but where will the course be held? Will it be on your website?
It will be on my website. Okay, so yeah, goodsideofthebed.com.au will be self-paced, and I promise it will be rich with learnings and all of my knowledge. I'm giving all of it away. I am not promoting to another course that will be released later. You're getting everything and you won't make $100,000 at the end of it, but you will create a podcast concept you can be proud of and that will work for your business.
Thank you so much, Kim, for coming on the podcast. Look, I always say this at the end. We really would love to see and hear from some of our listeners. So please like, share, rate, and review. I do say it, but we do read every single one and we do really appreciate it. And if you loved Kim and love the work and insights that she's provided with us today, definitely get on, listen to the podcast. And yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
Thanks for listening to Building Doors. If you've got comments or questions, send them to hello@buildingdoors.com.au. And remember to subscribe, rate, and review. See you next time.